You have put a new song in my mouth. A song of praise. A sound that resonates, that all of heaven and earth may worship you. We tread the hills to meet with you, to see your majesty in all that surrounds us. For it speaks and displays the eternal God of ages, creator, author, victor. In love, you established an everlasting covenant with your people, and it's your love that captivates us. As children of the King, we rush in as waves unrestrained, overcome, overwhelmed, that the King crowned in glory and splendor would reach down to place a crown upon our heads. So we raise our banner, the banner we boldly stand under, the banner of Jesus Christ. From dusk to dawn, from age to age, your praise resounds in all the earth. Deliverer, Redeemer, ruler of an everlasting kingdom that cannot be shaken, we trust in the name of Christ Jesus, the only King, forever.
Welcome to Zion's Redemption Radio. This is Fundamentally Mormon. I'm your host, Mark Lichtenwalter. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. You can find this at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. And the text will also be posted on my Facebook wall at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. You can also find the text and the audio to this radio program on iTunes at Fundamentally Mormon and in the different Facebook groups that I am an admin of. Some of those groups are LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, Latter-day Unity, and others. You can find the pages that I admin also on my Facebook wall. And if you enjoy this program, please friend request me or follow me and make me one of your close friends. We try to put out as many episodes as we can during the week. But I'm thankful for you to be here today. Let's get right into the reading. Today, we are going to be reading out of Ogden Kraut's books. You can find his books for free to read online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. Welcome to the program today. This is Mark Lichtenwalter. It is the 23rd day of March 2021. Sorry, we're having technical difficulties today. I'm going to get into the reading now. Let me see here. Oh my gosh. Some issues. I have opened up a chat room at the website blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. And I'm just going to get right into the reading because we only have 30 minutes left on the live streaming portion of the radio show, and we'll probably have to go into overdrive today as well. So I'll just dedicate the program real quick, and then we'll get right into the reading. Our Father in heaven, we come before thee in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. We ask thee, Father, to forgive us of our sins and our transgressions, that we might have thy Spirit to be with us more fully. We thank thee for the opportunity to be able to speak to a worldwide audience as we talk about church offices and the priesthood. We love thee, Father, and we dedicate our time unto thee and do so in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Church Offices, Part 1 of Chapter 7 of Holy Priesthood, Volume 3, pages 92 through 98.
Appendages to the priesthood. According to the Doctrine and Covenants, church offices are appendages to the holy priesthood after the order of the Son of God or the Melchizedek priesthood. Quote, there are in the church two priesthoods, namely the Melchizedek and the Aaronic, including the Levitical priesthood. Hold on here. Okay, sorry about that. Including the Levitical. Why did they do that? Why they say two priesthoods, Melchizedek and Aaronic, including the Levitical priesthood? Like the Aaronic priesthood and the Levitical priesthood are the same thing, I think. But whatever. Anyway. Well, Joseph Smith said that all priesthood was Melchizedek. I'm just going to get into that later. All right. Why the first is called the Melchizedek priesthood is because Melchizedek was such a great high priest. Before his day, it was called the holy priesthood after the order of the Son of God. But out of respect or reverence to the name of the Supreme Being, to avoid the too frequent repetition of his name, they, the church, in ancient days, called that priesthood after Melchizedek, or the Melchizedek priesthood. But God's not a name. God is a title, and it comes from a pagan word. So it would have been the holy priesthood after the order of the Son of Jehovah. So, let's see here. Also, a lot of people don't know, but the ancient Jews knew that Melchizedek was Shem, the son of Noah. Just something to throw out there, that he lived, before, during, and after the flood, and that he lived during the time of Noah and Abraham and others. Anyway, all other authorities or offices in the church are appendages to this priesthood. Doctrine and Covenants, section 107, verses 1 through 5. However, section 84 does clarify that certain offices are necessary appendages to the priesthood. Quote, and again, the office of elder and bishop are necessary appendages belonging unto the high priesthood. And again, the offices of teacher and deacon are necessary appendages belonging to the lesser priesthood, which priesthood was confirmed upon Aaron and his sons. Doctrine and Covenants, section 84, verses 29 through 30. It is through this priesthood authority that the LDS Church and all offices in it were established, signifying that the priesthood is greater than the church or any of its offices, or in other words, the Creator is greater than the creation. So the priesthood was restored before the church was restored. So there can be priesthood outside of the church. It wasn't dependent on, the church is actually dependent on the priesthood, but the priesthood is not dependent on the church. Meaning, Joseph Smith had the priesthood restored to him before the church was organized. Meaning, there can be priesthood outside of church. Also, in the, I think it's DNC section 45, God said that there were holy men that you know not of. Like men that were outside of the church, that were, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but perfect men outside of the church. So when people like get their badge of honor because they have this priesthood and they think they're better than other people, God has holy men outside of the church that you may not know about. And, like for myself, excuse me, like people judge people according to what they see. They would have judged John the Baptist according to his, his interesting appearance. You know, a wild man, or Enoch, the wild man, you know. But these were holy men of God, and the city of Zion, they thought, oh, a wild man has come among us. You know, John the Baptist, oh, a wild man that eats locusts and honey and wears camel hair, like, skins for clothes. And, you know, the whole reason why John the Baptist lived the way that he lived is because he was born 6 months before Jesus Christ was born, and he was part of the children who were supposed to be killed by King Herod and his soldiers. All the kids under 2 years old, they wanted them all dead, and Zechariah wouldn't give his baby up. And he instructed his wife Elizabeth to go into the wilderness and to hide, and they wanted him dead. So she went into the wilderness, and Zechariah actually wouldn't give his baby up, and they murdered him for it. So she hid her baby and raised him in the wilderness. Now, Jesus Christ and Mary and Joseph went down into Egypt to escape this nut job king of theirs, you know, so that Jesus wouldn't be murdered. And then he comes back, you know, later on, and they move to Nazareth and all of that. But John the Baptist, he didn't go down into Egypt. He was raised in the wilderness. So his circumstances made it so that he was this wild-looking man in the wilderness that did things a little bit different. People may have judged him for it, but he was one of those children who escaped the murderous sword of King Herod's soldiers. Continuing on, who has held these priesthood offices? From the time the priesthood was restored to Joseph Smith, its offices were available only to males. Like their Puritan counterparts 2 centuries earlier, Mormon women found themselves to be the bottom of the hierarchically ordered system. Kim, are you there? Hello? My wife is at Tractor Supply buying bird feed, and she's on the call, but she's not listening. I need to get her some I have bought her headsets before, but she doesn't like them, I guess. I'll get her some earbuds or something. Anyway, because I would like her to be able to listen to what I'm saying, but she's always so busy doing other things. My wife is actually... I don't want to say her maiden name on the program, but she's actually a direct descendant of the brother of the captain of the Mayflower, who are Puritans. The captain of the Mayflower never had any children, so he has no direct descendants, okay? But the brother, he did have children. And some of them lived. Anyway, so Kim is a direct descendant. She's been in this country ever since they stepped foot on the Plymouth Rock. And her family lives in New Hampshire. Excuse me. Let's see here. The Mormon order extended from the first presidency with the responsibility of governing the entire church through state presidents and bishops with governmental responsibility for specific geographic regions to the individual father whose priesthood responsibility was righteous government of his family, women assumed the responsibility for governing children and for heading households in the absence of their husbands, a frequent occurrence in Mormon society. This divinely designated order did not necessarily imply that females were intellectually or spiritually inferior to males. Brigham Young himself acknowledged that, quote, many women are smarter than their husbands. Journal of Discourses, Volume 9, page 39. Though it was not the privilege of women to dictate the husband. Journal of Discourses, Volume 17, page 159. Let's see here. Neither did, so that whole thing was actually a quote from Woman's Place in Brigham Young's World by Jill Mulvey Durr, BYU Studies, 18-3, Spring 1978, pages 380 through 381. Kim, can you hear me? Kim? Neither did Linda Newell find references to women holding these offices. I have not found recorded cases where women themselves have claimed ordination to priesthood offices. There are, however, accounts of women being ordained to special callings and of women who exercise powers and spiritual gifts now assigned only to men who hold the priesthood. These practices and their endorsement by such church leaders as Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, John Taylor, Heber J. Grant, and others have left the unanswered question of what authority women are intended to hold. And quote, the historical relationship of Mormon women and priesthood by Newell Women Newell Women and Authority by Hanks, page 23 through 24. The Lord does not usually give dictatorial mandates to the LDS Church as he does with the priesthood, without the voice and vote of the members. They have the option as to whether or not to sustain church officers and leaders, doctrines and programs. They have the right to vote in or sustain any color, sex, nationality, as part of their membership and officers. Unfortunately, however, today a negative vote may mean the sacrifice of one's temple recommend or church membership. See, when I talked about with my stake president after my mother-in-law turned me in for believing in polygamy and the Adam God doctrine, the thing that really angered my stake president, who I'd never met before when we lived in New Hampshire, we were in the Vermont stake. In fact, our branch was in Vermont. So if you drive north out of Littleton, you go into Vermont, and 45 miles later, you're at, if Kim was on, maybe she could tell me what the name of the branch was, but I hate it that she says that she's going to listen and then she just doesn't listen. And, like, this is so important to me to share these things with you guys. But this is all part of my... I've said, Kim, ask for your name a bunch of times.
You know?
I don't care if we don't have money. I'm buying you Raycon earbuds.
And now I'm chasing a cart because it's windy, trying to put Arius in the car seat. And I'm leaving him in the car by himself because the
cart
is going away. And it's going to hit somebody's truck that's more expensive than mine. Arius, come back. Now he's trying to climb into the front seat. Oh. Okay. He's running away from me. I know.
So this thing, is like, okay, so I share these things with everybody and I want to be a light to the people so that they can learn things. But also, like, I only have a limited amount of time where I can actually do a study. So I'm basically sharing my study with the world. So that's why I do these things. And this is the time that I have to do it. And it's nice because, like, I don't have to have my wife home, you know, to do it. And I don't get to see her hardly anyway during the week, except for in the mornings, maybe a little bit at night. So it's kind of nice that I'm able to do this. So I could be able to have her here, but she is busy doing other things, which I understand that she needs to do that, but it does frustrate me some because I'm trying to learn. And I would like my wife to be there to learn with me. But you don't always get what you want.
Okay, I just put the cart back so it would not run into somebody else's vehicle. I had to chase the baby up front because I left the baby in the seat and had to run after the cart. I grabbed the cart before it hit this, you know, $75,000 Ford truck.
If he's at Tractor Supply, he's a farmer and he understands things hitting his truck.
And then the baby's in here because I just got back in the car. I'm putting the cart away. He's mad.
Hi, Arius.
Yeah. He was mad at me because I wouldn't let him climb and sit up front in the front seat, though he was in the front seat when I got back to the car. But I couldn't leave him unbuckled in the car while I put the cart back. So I had to, like, hold the cart, get him buckled, and bring the cart in.
Kim.
Harder when it's windy. Also, I unloaded bags of feed, so I got some goat because we have the new goats. So I have the ones that's good for the moms because they're milking and for the baby goats. And Emmett wants me to go get milk, and I'm like, ah.
Tell him to go out with a bowl and milk one of the three mother goats that we have on the farm.
Right? Like, oh, goodness.
Anyway, so I was asking about the Mayflower. What was the name of the captain of the Mayflower?
Oh, no. Okay, the Mayflower. Oh, John Carver.
Okay, and what was the name of his brother?
Thomas? I can't remember.
But he's the guy that you're related to.
I know. I know. I can't remember.
So, what was the name of the branch that we went to in Vermont?
Oh, Montpelier Steak. It was the Linden.
So it was Linden, Vermont.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just trying to remember. I can remember Littleton and Lisbon and Franconia and Mount Washington. But I couldn't remember. What's that?
Because we went there and that was fun.
Yeah, Kim's mom used to work as an accountant at the Cog Railway in Mount Washington, and we used to go for free on the train that goes all the way up the side of this mountain, and the thing's like at a 45-degree angle, and they have cogs in the tracks to go up to the top of Mount Washington, which means it's really, really, really steep. And wasn't it a choo-choo train, or was it a diesel locomotive? I can't remember.
Oh.
Did they have a choo-choo train, like with the puffy smoke and the...
I don't even remember, and you had to ask that question. I am trying to think. I don't remember.
I know we have pictures, but it's been a while since I've looked at those pictures.
Okay, you're at this store to go get milk, and I won't say what store because we don't endorse them, and they don't pay us. But I'm going to park next to a place where there are carts so I don't have to chase the cart trying to buckle the baby.
Okay.
Like, I don't care if we have to walk a mile. I'm
You know, it's funny. My mom used to get mad when she couldn't find a spot all the way up front close to the store, like at Walmart or whatever. But then she would run triathlons and marathons. I'm like, Mom, you run like 20 miles a day. You can't walk 100 extra yards. Like, just park your brand new vehicle out here in the back 40 so nobody will ding your car and stop worrying about trying to get... She would be like that lady that would be like pulling through a spot. And then she'd see a spot that was like two spots closer and then pull over into that spot. And it's like, wait, you could have saved enough. Oh my gosh. Like, oh, she drives me nuts. Anyway, I'm buying you Raycons. I don't care what you say.
Your what?
Raycons, wireless earphones.
Oh, I thought that was a sunglasses.
I think it might be. But Ben Shapiro and Glenn Beck are always talking about their Raycons. So, of course, you would lose them. And they're waterproof, though, so you can wash them accidentally every other day. And they'd be fine, maybe. Hello. I should be a sponsor for Raycon. Maybe I could get some money that way. But then I would be selling the gospel and I don't want to get money that way. Arius. How's this mister doing? Hi, little mister. Is he looking around?
Yeah, he's like, what is going on?
Well, he knows that I talk on the phone to him all the time. Anyway, I'll continue with this. I was talking about, like, the reason why the stake president, like, he brought me in because of what somebody had said. But then what made him really mad is that I wouldn't sustain Thomas Monson as a prophet, seer, and revelator. So instead of trying to recover me or, like, work with me or even getting to know who I am, he turns beet red and tells me that he's going to excommunicate me from the church because I won't sustain this man. Who I was like, well, I would sustain him if he had the actual fruit of being a prophet, seer, and revelator, but he doesn't have the fruit of being a prophet, seer, and revelator, so I'm not going to sustain him. You know? So he turns beet red because I won't sustain a man. I'm still in the church. I did sustain him as president of the church. You know, and I took him seriously when he talked about things. But I wasn't going to sustain somebody who doesn't have the fruits of actually being a prophet, seer, and revelator. With all of his cute stories about how he used to help the widows in his ward and whatnot, you know. So, I mean, I liked Thomas Monson. I liked Gordon B. Hinckley. I knew who they were. I actually met them many, many, many times, you know. But I wasn't going to sustain him. So, and that's kind of what we were talking about a minute ago. Let me get back into the reading, though. Unfortunately, however, today a negative vote, meaning a negative sustaining vote, may mean the sacrifice of one's temple recommend or church membership. In fact, at the October 1994 Solemn Assembly Session of General Conference, President Gordon B. Hinckley instructed the stake presidencies to report any negative votes directly to the first presidency, which would probably result in some type of disciplinary action for the individual members. Hey, Satan, you mind letting us have our free agency and not being a dictator? Oh, wait, no, that's what Satan does. Oh, those are the fruits of Satan. That's not how God works. And like I said, I love President Hinckley. I cried when he died. But that's a bunch of crap, in my humble opinion. Anyway, let's see here. They get a little bit too full of themselves, I think. Of course, people might say that about me as well. Let's see here. Joseph Fielding Smith once said, "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the most democratic institution in the world." Improvement Area, Volume 21, page 100. The first presidency even reiterated this in the 1970-71 course of study for the Melchizedek priesthood quorums on page 103. However, this is a debatable statement, since most decisions are made by church leaders without any vote from its members. In fact, the only reason that they get you to sustain anything at all is because there is an instruction where they're supposed to, but they don't listen. President Russell M. Nelson, he was supposed to wait for sustaining vote before he was placed as president of the church. Nope. He had to call all of the 12 apostles and, you know, all of these people into the Salt Lake Temple to have him set apart right away as president and prophet, seer, and revelator without having a sustaining vote. That happened. He didn't wait. He was supposed to wait. It's not only tradition to wait, it's in the instruction, the instructions God gave for the church. But damn the instructions. Anyway, and it's so stupid because, like, because you point these things out, people are like, you're anti-Mormon. I'm actually not anti-Mormon. I'm anti-current Babylonian leadership of the church. I mean, I point out things that they're supposed to be doing that they decide that they don't have to do because they're the big chiefs in charge, and Jesus Christ appears nowhere to be guiding them at all. You know, you don't have any thus saith the Lord revelations or visitations or instructions. Oh, wait, no, you do. It's called the Doctrine and Covenant.
Before Darius gets mad again, hold on.
Okay.
Hold on, monkey, 1 second. We do buckle. I'm just anti-lying. I just don't like the lies and the trying to...
Gaslighting, lying,
I don't like when they're trying to, like, cover things up and, like, it's deception.
I don't like that there's deception. Like, they're like, well, don't look over this way. Let's look over that way. Or, you know, they try to explain
change
away
things.
Well, not really. And then they let people believe things like white lies, like...
Yep.
You know,
and they
never said they saw
history.
Jesus Christ, or they never did that, you know, but then they let people believe that this person sees God or sees Jesus Christ, but they never say it. They just insinuate it, and then they're
or they
not
might
really
even say it,
true.
Like David O. McKay. David O. McKay said that Jesus Christ's eyes were brown, but Joseph Smith said that they were blue, and I've seen him, and they're blue, and Kim has seen him, and they're blue. But David O. McKay says they're brown. Well, who did David O. McKay see? Well, Satan's eyes are brown, and he looks very much like Jesus Christ, very, very similar, but his eyes are brown. Not saying anything bad about people with brown eyes, because my wife, if you look very closely through the blackness of her eyes, you can kind of see that they are a little bit brown.
Okay.
Ken, my wife's eyes are black. You can barely see her pupils. They're so black, unless you look really close.
It's because I'm part Indian.
Yeah. Cherokee or Comanche or what? I can't remember. Apache or Comanche. It's Apache or, I don't know, Comanche. Isn't that your mother's maiden name, Comanche?
Capatch?
Okay, anyway. Oh, we're going into the overdrive for anybody. So if you drop the call, well, people listen to it on iTunes. They don't listen to it live, apparently. Especially when I sleep. I slept through my alarm today, everyone. The alarm goes... How long does the alarm go off for when I don't turn it off, Kevin? And it's kind of loud. 5 minutes?
Forever.
Like, how do I sleep through a five-minute alarm? And I can see it's on. I can see that the little icon thing is on. You know, but I slept through it. Who knows why I slept through it? I have an alarm on my phone, too. Slept through that. In fact, the only reason I woke up is because I could hear the girls giggling downstairs. And I'm like, what? They're home? Wait, what time is it? And then I had issues trying to get on the program, too. So, anyway. For example, one particular program change occurred in 1902 with church leaders. Without calling for a vote from the membership, they decided to send 27 lady missionaries out into the field, two by two, just as the elders were going. See Messages of the First Presidency, Volume 3, page 50. Okay, that was a thing that had never happened before. They did not send women out as missionaries. And in fact, there's no instruction for women to go out as missionaries to begin with. In fact, the only people who were supposed to go out as missionaries were elders who were called to the apostleship. Now, a lot of people don't realize that the 70s are supposed to be apostles and they're supposed to be elders in the church, according to the instructions in the Doctrine and Covenants. And in fact, if you want to read a really good book about that subject, the 70 apostles, go read the 70s by Ogden Crowd. It's at ogdencrowd.com. I've covered it on, I don't know if I've covered it on Fundamentally Mormon, but I covered it on my old radio show, The Kingdom of God. The Kingdom of God or Nothing. Unfortunately, Blog Talk Radio, since they were done so long ago, they're erasing them, you know, and like I bet within a year all of them will be erased. That's why I'm trying to get everything onto YouTube, but that takes time and energy, you know, to do that because you have to upload them. And we don't have internet here that's fast enough to upload things. I try to upload them on my phone after midnight when nobody calls me, when I'm driving my truck. But like the other day I uploaded one program. I tried to upload it like after midnight all the way. It continued trying to upload all the way through the day as I was sleeping. And then the next day, the beginning of my next shift, it's still trying to upload. It's like, oh, this is so stupid for one program, you know. Anyway, continuing. I'm just complaining about a lot of things today. I'm sorry. All right. No administrations, ordinations, or baptisms were to be performed by them, but they held the office or calling of a full-time missionary. These callings have gradually increased up to the present time and are with an average of about 20% of the LDS Church missionaries being women, but at times it would go as high as 40%. Let's see. This is a history of female missionary activity from 1830 to 1898 by Calvin Kuntz, BYU thesis. Occasionally, when a vote has been called, dissenting votes against a prospective office holder may have had an influence on the final outcome. Thus, the church may be considered as somewhat democratic. But the priesthood, on the other hand, does not derive its power or validity from the vote of church members. Its principles and laws come from God and are eternal. And if individuals vote against them, they are condemning themselves, not the priesthood. Nevertheless, God and Christ do not impose tyranny on any of their subjects. Does, if you know anything about Short Creek and what the church did in Short Creek, or the fundamentalists, anybody who like used to go to cottage meetings, who was members of the church, they would get their license plates and then they would have it run through the police department and find out who was at the meetings, and then if they were members of the church, they'd get called in to be excommunicated. You know, because you can't have fundamentalists talking to members. Hey, guess what, though? You know what's really cool? We have this thing called the internet now. And on the internet, we have these things called podcasts, and people like myself can talk on them. And you know what's really cool? Well, you know it's not cool? I'm like the only one that talks about fundamentally, or like Mormon fundamentalism. Like, why isn't there more? Like, Moroni Jessup finally, started doing TikToks where he talks about it, and I'm grateful for that. I want more of that. You know, but what other fundamentalist is out there actually being a light to the world and sharing the truth with people and sharing the true doctrine, you know, but where are they? I don't know where they are. I would like to know where they are, but I'm the only one that does, you know, a program that, like, there's Lindsay Hanson Park, but she, Year of Polygamy, and that's all interesting, and I love that. She's not a Mormon fundamentalist. You know, she, like, does an interesting radio show on the podcast, and I enjoy that. But why don't we have more? Oh, because it takes time and commitment to do these things, and they have other things that they have to do, I guess. I don't know. I would, of course, I wouldn't do this if I wasn't commanded to. God told me to do this, so I'm doing it. And even though I would rather be doing other things, this is what I'm trying to do because I'm trying to be obedient. But then also, like I said, this is partly my time of study where I can actually sit down and read. Now, I listen to things all the time, but actually sitting down and reading, this is it. This is the time I've got. And then in the mornings, I'm usually too tired. If I try to read anything in the mornings, I'll just fall asleep in my chair. Hey, Kim knows that. Anyway, nevertheless, God and Christ do not impose tyranny on any of their subjects. In the early years of the church, it was repeatedly... Actually, I wanted to say something. I believe in fundamentalist teachings, but not all of them. And kind of weird because most fundamentalists believe Brigham Young was a prophet, and I don't. Most fundamentalists believe that there's a Lord's anointed on the earth from the days of Joseph Smith till now. I don't. But I guess we could call ourselves neo-messianic fundamentalist Mormons, kind of. You know, I don't think there's a category for. Oh, there is a category: nut job, lunatic, heretic. I mean, there's lots of names that you could call me. But whatever. I'm just trying to find the truth. And Joseph Smith said all truth is Mormon. And I'm trying to find the truth. And I do know what a lot of the truth is, but I'm also, like, looking for, you know, setting things out for myself so that we can, so that I can understand things better, you know, because we're learning. I'm learning and growing, just like everybody out there is learning and growing. So, and as a gospel doctrine teacher, I always learned way more than the students did because I would study things out to teach a lesson. Well, that's what I'm doing here. I'm learning more than anybody out there. Now, nobody's listened to all of my programs. Not one person. I've listened to them all because I listen to myself talk. You know, but I get to learn more by reading and presenting these things than anybody else does. So, anyway... of course, I wouldn't consider myself an expert either, which is maybe weird for people to hear, but I don't consider myself an expert. I'm always interested to hear what other people have to say because other people have insights and perspectives. That's why I listen to Denver Snuffer's podcast. Not that I believe Denver Snuffer is a prophet, but he brings things up that are interesting to think about. You know? So I'll listen to anybody, especially if they're talking about the restoration. So if you know any podcasts out there, let me know about them. And, you know, people, I have a couple of really very, very popular groups on Facebook, and I'm willing to let anybody who has Mormon thoughts post there, even if I don't agree with them. Of course, if they start calling the church names in the groups, then let's be tactful. Of course, I can't say that too much because I'm not tactful myself. But anyway, in the early years of the church, it was repeatedly taught that endowed married women held the priesthood in connection with their husbands and had the same rights, blessings, powers, and privileges, but generally the expression of that point of view was discouraged and suppressed. In recent years, however, that teaching has been rediscovered, and many women are clamoring for those rights again. The problem is undertaking the correct nature and exercising of this priesthood. Some women want it conferred on them with the subsequent ordination to a priesthood office in the church. Even some men have supported this position, as James Chapman wrote, quote, Mormon males are taught from infancy that the priesthood will be given to them by a just, kind, and loving Father in heaven as one of the most desirable and useful gifts that they could ever possess in this life or throughout eternity. Females are taught that God wasn't referring to them, that he has made them unacceptable as human beings to hold the priesthood office, which I think is a bunch of crap, but this is what... the other thing, too, okay, I'm supposed to finish the quote. I will in a minute. There's nowhere in the scriptures or in the Doctrine and Covenants where women are barred from holding priesthood. But there is things within the Pearl of Great Price in the Old Testament where Canaanites are not supposed to hold the priesthood. And in fact, in Zechariah chapter 14, we find out that Zechariah is seeing a vision of the millennium and the temple in the millennium. And he makes a point of referring to the Canaanites by saying that they are not, and in that day, there will be no more Canaanite in the house of the Lord. Okay, now, they weren't supposed to have the priesthood to begin with. That was a teaching of early prophets way back in the day, okay? And the Canaanites, you're not supposed to marry among the Canaanites as Israelites. That's actually in the Old Testament. And it was taught in the Restoration that Canaanites are not to be given the priesthood. But then they get some pressure from Babylon, and they give Canaanites the priesthood. But with all of the things that say Canaanites are not to have the priesthood, in fact, and including Zechariah's vision of the temple in the millennium, where he actually makes a point of saying, and there will be no more Canaanite in the house of the Lord. So meaning somebody did let them into the temple, which they're not supposed to be in the temple. And God had to correct that in the millennium. But there's no place that says women are not to be allowed in the temple or to have the priesthood. So they will go out of their way to make sure that certain people get the priesthood that shouldn't have it. And you can actually go to scriptural and like leadership of the church. You know, and I thought that the church president or the prophet, like for instance Brigham Young, could never lead the church astray. Oh, but he was wrong about that. You see where Kim and I are coming from with this hypocrisy and these lies and this gaslighting and this false authority that they claim all the time, you know, that drives us both insane. You know, but there's no place where it doesn't say women can have priesthood or whatever, that they're barred from priesthood, but they don't get it. So, I don't know. I don't even know. Anyway, it doesn't matter because women can have priesthood, and it doesn't require the church for them to have it. Just like the church, the priesthood existed before the church, and the church the priesthood is not dependent upon some authority figure in a church. You know, like the matriarchal priesthood isn't dependent on church. It's dependent upon God and his true priesthood holders. Anyway, continuing on. We're 60% done with the reading today. Let's see if we can get through this before the end of the overdrive. What effect does it have on a woman's image of herself when she is instructed that no matter what she does, she cannot gain equal status with men in the eyes of God? What is her reaction to this message? Will it inspire her to do good, to love God, to be at peace with herself and others? And what of the men throughout her lifetime who convey this message to her? Will they be filled with love, humility, and compassion? Will a deep sense of human equality and empathy guide their involvement with women? Or do they think that because they are so honored to have the priesthood that their wives must obey them? And that kind of abuse actually happens all the time within the LDS Church. Because these ignorant men think that they're better than their wives. What does it do to a woman or a young girl to hear over and over again in so many ways and at all times that because she is female, she has been denied by God and made unqualified to hold priesthood as men can? You know, there were more valiant elect females in the pre-existence than there were males. Because the nature of women is more godly than men. What does it do to a woman's sense of her own worth to know that the most important realm of her life, she is not valued as men are valued? She will never have the same chances or opportunities as they will have. Salt Lake Tribune, September 2nd, 1990. Mr. Chapman concedes that his frustrations would be lessened by giving women the same offices in the church that male members are entitled to. He concluded, quote, "Optimistically, however, a new and promising perspective is beginning to surface. A growing number of Latter-day Saints now feel that the lack of priesthood office should in no way precede or preclude female participation in all governing units of the modern church, so that they can have their token woman in there. You know, oh, we're listening to the women, so we got somebody in here who we'll listen to, and then when we're done listening to her yammer on about whatever she's yammering on about, we'll do what we want to do. But this is for a PR, public image kind of thing, which is what I think that they do it for, not because they're trying to, like, reconcile anything or whatever. But anyway, let's see here. Talented and loving women will be as effective in Mormon bishoprics, but they're not. Stake presidencies, but they're not. The excommunication trials, the only time there's a woman involved is if she is the wife of the person getting excommunicated or the actual person being excommunicated at the stake level. Let's see here. High councils and in the ranks of general authorities as males will be, end quote. Other public voices have supported the same propositions. Edwin Firmage stated, quote, "The University of Utah law professor Edward Firmage," okay, whatever, I said, whatever, I'm going to read the quote. "University of Utah law professor Edwin Firmage says there is no doctrinal basis for the Mormon Church's restriction against women holding the church's priesthood or other authoritative issues. Within my own religious tradition, I longed for that time when four black people, three, why does it have to be black? But let's listen to the liberal guy, the leftist. I longed for that time when four black people, three of them women, will sit on the stand as general authorities at General Conference," said Mr. Firmage, referring to offices in the LDS Church that currently only men may hold. No reason exists in Mormon doctrine, I believe, to prevent full priesthood participation by women with every office and calling in the church being open to them. He said at the moment, at the annual Mossinger Douglas lecture at the Cathedral of the Madeleine. That's a pretty church. You should go check it out. It's like down the street from Temple Square, if you haven't been in there. They do organ recitals, I think, every day. But, yeah, it's a beautiful. In fact, you might not be able to see it now because the Salt Lake Temple is being destroyed on the inside and remade. But the Cathedral of the Madeleine, which is a Catholic cathedral in Salt Lake, if you go in the celestial room and you turn around and you look up, if you're facing the east towards the veils and you look up, there's actually a statue of Mother Mary up at the top. It's pretty, you know. There's also a statue in the celestial room of Cupid, which is given by the Greek Orthodox to put in the temple, and that's where they put it. But you know what? Who knows if they'll keep all of that junk, because they're going to get rid of a bunch of stuff and they're going to redo a bunch of things and they're going to make the temple into something different, because they're all about change. You know, they change the endowment, they change the doctrine, they change the ordinances, they change the endowment, they change everything, they change the washings and the anointings. Did you know in the temple they used to have bathtubs so that you could have your washings and your anointings? And by the time I got my washings and anointings in 1997, they were dabbing their finger into a thing, and then they put it on you, and they call that a washing. And now they don't even do that. Like, if God told us to do things a certain way, who in the hell do they think they are changing everything all the time? God gave the endowment to be done a certain way. Did you know that the endowment used to take like all day long? I think it was like 7 or 8 hours when it was first reintroduced to the saints in the St. George Temple. It was an all-day-long process. What happened? Oh, they cut a little off here and they cut a little off there because they want to make it fit with the times, and they just get rid of more and more and more. Do you not realize that this is apostasy? This is full-on biblical definition of iniquity. When you depart from the path that God has laid out for you to follow, that is what iniquity means. Oh, and if I bring it up, I'm a heretic and an apostate. Will you stop defending the bad actions of your church leaders? They've got your mind so wrapped up in that they are holy men of God and that they can do no wrong, that when they do wrong in your face, you just say, well, it must be the will of God, because you're feckless. And you allow this to happen right in front of your face, and because they've got you so wrapped up in their lies, you allow it to happen. And it disgusts me. And it's the reason why Jesus Christ told Joseph Smith that he would have to send one mighty and strong to set the house of God in order, which implies that it would get out of order, and it has. And if you don't just follow the correlated crap that they give you and actually go back and study all of the truth of the restoration, you might understand just how far things have changed. And that's why Kim and I are like, we can't stand the lies, because we know the truth. Am I still coming through, Kim? Hopefully I'm still coming through. I don't have any way to know if I'm coming through or not. This profound visual message of healing would transcend an immediate healing power every sermon ever given in our holy house. The the Mormon Tabernacle, I don't know. Salt Lake Tribune, March 9, 1989. With this approach, Mr. Firmage is taking an opposite view from prophets, patriarchs, and apostles of the past 6,000 years. He concludes with his own view on how, first of all, he's all like, well, there's nothing that precludes women from holding the priesthood, so we should give it to the blacks. Actually, there is plenty which precludes the Canaanites from holding priesthood. But he's right. There's nothing that stops women from holding priesthood. In fact, there's evidence that they received it as part of the restoration, but now we don't give it to them because they gaslight and they change all the time. Anyway, let's see here. Mr. Firmage is taking an opposite view from prophets, patriarchs, and apostles of the past 6,000 years. He concludes with his own view of how he is reconciled to God, which sounds more confusing than sensible. Reconciliation with God comes from introspection, understanding others, and correcting injustices. Quote, within my own soul, I became male and female, Mormon and Catholic, Jew, Muslim, and Hindu, Russian and American, black, brown, and white. And that's what Mr. Firmage said. So I guess he's all things to all people. You know, this is so long ago, but this is kind of like, if I feel like I'm a woman, I must be a woman. You know, like white privilege shouldn't exist, because if I feel like I'm black, even though I'm white, I should be able to be black. You know, it's just the lunacy of the left, which is Satan's, you know, this is Satan's confusion. Paul likens the church to a human body, each person being a vital part of that church, and all are necessary for it to function properly. Women are part of that church body, perhaps the inner part that is not so visible, but their functions and contributions are just as necessary as any other part. Paul says that the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of thee, nor can any part say that it has no need of any other part. See 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 14 through 23. It is also necessary to understand that one part cannot desire to be some other part. The rib cannot say that she wants to be the arm, or the eye wants to be the head. Whatever the calling of God that God gives us, we should be satisfied with it. Thus, a woman should graciously accept the fact that her priesthood calling is not elder, bishop, 70, or apostle, but wife, mother, teacher, and comforter. These are at least as important and demanding as any of those other jobs exercised by men. And quote, Rodney Turner, Women in the Priesthood, page 287. Priesthood never has just a badge, title, rank, position, or office, but rather authority, leadership, and rule that when exercised righteously is a guided influence in the family, showing the way back to our Heavenly Father's presence. So when I come back on tomorrow, we'll be doing part two of the Holy Priesthood, volume 3, chapter 7, and that is governing the church. And that one will be just as long as today's is. So anyway, hopefully I wake up on time tomorrow. I can't believe I flipping slept through the alarm clock. I must have been really tired. Now, excuse me. I didn't realize this until this morning when I came home, and there was we're almost out of pellets for our pellet stove, which is how we heat our house. So I was like, so I guess I've got to go to the local place where we get pellets for our pellet stove so that we can heat our house, but they don't open until 7:30. So my kids don't leave for school till like 7:15. So I waited, and I went to, and usually I go to bed by 7:30. Right after the kids go to school, I'm in bed and falling asleep pretty quick because I'm tired, you know? So anyway, but instead of going to bed, I like run out to Price, 20-something miles north of us. And I went in and I got pellets and I got some other things that I needed to get. And then since I'm out there and I'm in my 15-passenger gas-guzzling beast of a van that is all we have right now because the other vehicles broke down, I realized that it's $2.82 and at Walmart's for gas. And I know that because of the administration's policies that gas prices are probably going to continue going up. So I was like, okay, well, I know I got gas yesterday, but I'm going to get gas today. So I got gas because if I wait, it's going to go up. So I might as well get it now, right? So I get gas, and then I head home. And, you know, I took the dogs out so they could go to the bathroom, and then I brought them in, and then I came upstairs and moved things off the bed and laid down and fell right to sleep around 9:30. And then I was still going to get up and do my radio show because I'd committed that I slept through the alarm. I actually slept through the alarm on my phone and the alarm. Actually, you know what I need to do? I have a trucker's alarm. I should probably get that out and start using it. It's loud. And it will wake you up. But actually, it's 120 decibels when it's on high. So this one time I was driving, I used to drive for this company called Eagle Eye Transportation or Lickety Split. So it was Eagle Eye Distribution, but the name of the company was called Lickety Split. And I had this beautiful Kenworth. It was a W900. With the studio sleeper. Oh my gosh, this truck was so beautiful. Chrome, and it was emerald green, and it was ungoverned, and I could go as fast as I wanted. And so what my job was I would take potatoes down to Mexico. I'd drive from Clark County, Idaho, or maybe it was Jefferson County, Idaho, which is near Idaho Falls, north of Idaho Falls, actually. And I would drive down to Nogales, Arizona, and I would drive straight. It usually takes about 19 hours, I think. Maybe it was 16 hours. I don't know. But anyway, I was a madman, and I always thought it was cool. Like, let's see how fast I can go, and let's see how long I can drive for, because it's a game and a challenge. Anyway, I would drive straight down to the border. I would back into the dock that was owned by this company, Eagle Eye Produce, and I would disconnect from the trailer and pull a little bit forward so when they're loading me, it wasn't driving me nuts. And they would unload my trailer while I was sleeping. And back then, you only had to take 8 hours off. So they'd unload my trailer while I was sleeping and reload it with things coming up from Mexico, like tomatoes and whatnot. And then I would, when I would wake up, I would hook into the trailer and I would drive it up to the Freeport Center in Clearfield, Utah, unload there at the Freeport Center with a forklift, and then drive empty up to Idaho and get another load of potatoes and then sleep there and then go back down to Arizona. So I was driving straight from basically Idaho Falls down to the Nogales, Nuevo Nogales, like border on the Mexican border. And why did I bring this up? I don't know why I brought this up. Kim, are you there? Do you know why I brought this up? So she probably doesn't, wouldn't even know if she was listening to me, like why I brought this up. Oh, it's because of the alarm. So, all right, so I used to do this back and forth all the time, and I used to wear myself out. And one time I was trying to get from Nogales to the Freeport Center, which is not legal. You're not supposed to do this. But I did it anyway. I don't care. Whatever. So anyway, I was having a hard time staying awake. And it was even the daytime. I was daytime. Anyway, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a little nap. So I got to Nephi and pulled into the Flying J, and I took a little nap. And I was only, I think I was going to sleep for like an hour and then get up and drive the rest of the way from Nephi to Clearfield so I could deliver. And I slept through the trucker alarm, the loud 120 decibel trucker alarm, because I was that worn out. No, I wasn't this worn out today. I don't know why I slept through the alarm today, but when I finally did wake up 6 or 7 hours later, my boss is mad because they don't know where I'm at, because like they expect me to run this crazy run that's not even legal. Okay. But my alarm, I can still remember hearing the noise of the alarm as the battery is slowly dying because the alarm's been on for so long. So I guess it happens sometimes. Anyway, I think we're going to be done with the program today, and we will forego doing... Hold on here. We will forego doing... the second endowment. I'm just going to play the music. But anyway, thank you everyone for listening. I'm sorry that I slept through the alarm, and hopefully I'll do better tomorrow. So talk to you later. Take care, everyone. God bless, and goodbye. Thank you.